The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
Like I say to my writing students, you're going to outline at some point. So either you can do it beforehand or you can do it in the middle when you have created a huge knot and you don't know what to do. Or you can do it at the end when you have a big pile of chaos and have to find a story within that. And I've found that the earlier in the process you do it, the better it is.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. New York Times bestselling author Eleanor Brown spoke to me about the difference between writers and authors, why adoptive families are just like any other family, and her latest novel, Any Other Family. Eleanor's critically acclaimed debut novel, The Weird Sisters, was a New York Times and number one international bestseller, with over 500,000 copies sold. The novel earned excellent reviews from the New York Times, NPR, eWeekly, People, USA Today, and many others. Her latest is Any Other Family, a novel about four siblings, three adoptive mothers, and one complicated, unforgettable family. Kirkus Reviews described it as a prismatic story of family adoption and how the people we choose to keep close shape who we are. Eleanor is an anthologist, editor, teacher, speaker, and adoptive mother herself. She teaches writing workshops and conferences nationwide, including for the Writers' Table and Lighthouse Writers' Workshops in Colorado. In this file, Eleanor and I discussed her 15-year overnight success, why she doesn't read her reviews, on becoming an adoptive mother and open adoption, why novelists have to outline at some point, how to start with a destination in mind, and why you need to start calling yourself a writer. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. And we are rolling on The Writer Files once again. I am honored to be joined today by New York Times bestselling author Eleanor Brown is joining us. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled.
Yeah, this is exciting. I'm excited for your latest and kind of the story surrounding it and your kind of your personal connection to the work. But I can't wait to dig into your dossier a little bit and talk about your circuitous route to bestseller, as so many authors have these fascinating stories that kind of precede the accolades and the acclaim. But yeah, talk a little bit about your kind of fascinating history as a writer and kind of all these past lives that you've had.
I think, like most people, I believe there's no such thing as overnight success, unless you count overnight as, 15 years of work. I have always written and always thought that I wanted to kind of, quote, be a writer, but I didn't know what that meant. And it didn't seem like a very good way to earn a living, like there's no formal apprenticeship for it. Yeah. But I did a lot, and I think I really got serious kind of in my 20s. I started publishing shorter pieces and then started working on novels. And I say that in plural because there were a lot of really terrible novels that I wrote before The Weird Sisters, which was my first published book. Mm. But, I just kind of... I kept trying and I kept failing better, right? And then finally, I found an agent for The Weird Sisters, and then it took a very long time to find a publisher. Well, first of all, it took a very long time to find an agent. I think I queried 99 agents before I found one.
Oh my.
And then I think it took about 2 years to sell to a publisher, and then I spent another year editing it. And then, as you know about the book, traditional book publishing process, that's slow too. So it took another year to come out. So I think it was like about 7 years from the time that I started writing the book until it actually hit bookstores. Yeah. So I always say, if you're looking to for a speedy path for fame and fortune, I recommend reality television. Writing is not it. And then, you know, The Weird Sisters was this wonderful success for which I was really grateful. Mm. And then I was faced with the question of what comes next. Yeah. So I had to write some more terrible books before my second novel, The Light of Paris, came out. And then I wrote some more terrible ones. Before this one, Any Other Family. So yeah, it's definitely been, I saw a tweet that said something like, you know, we think of writing as, I don't know, sort of the smooth, or publishing as the smooth slope, but it's really like a roller coaster that turns into a slip and slide. And I feel like that's such an apt analogy. So you just have to keep at it because it's what you love.
Oh, I love that. the slip and slide. Definitely an interesting and apt analogy there. So talk a little bit about kind of how you're feeling going into the latest and the promotional piece. And then, the book has had some critical acclaim and some really nice blurbs, which I will mention, of course, the title, Any Other Family. Also very apropos given the subject matter, but yeah, talk about kind of how you're feeling right at this moment prior to the actual publication date. It's available for pre-order now, but it's available July 12th, I believe.
Yes, July 12th. It's kind of a strange feeling. I think that one of the things that's hard is that there's this part of the job that's being a writer, and there's part of this job that's being an author. And they're two very different things. And it's a strange thing that we expect people to be good at both. Like, you need to be good at both locking yourself in a room and being alone with your thoughts for really long periods of time. But then also, you need to be really good at talking to people and getting up in front of, you know, hopefully large crowds and discussing that. Those are two totally different skill sets. And I think that's a really hard thing to do. And for me, it's always a little bit of a shock making that adjustment. And it's also a funny thing. Like, I remember when I went to New York before The Weird Sisters was published, and I was walking around the offices of Penguin, you know, talking to people, and they were like, oh, I loved your book. And I was like, you read my book? Like, this thing that's been inside my head for so long, other people are experiencing it too. And one of the great lessons that The Weird Sisters taught me is that, you know, you put your work out into the world, it no longer belongs to you. Hmm. And people are going to make of it what they make of it, and they're going to bring all their own stuff to it, and you just have to let it go. And I think that it's one of the, so I don't read reviews. I don't allow my publisher to send them to me. They can tell me if they exist, but I don't want to read them. And I think that part of the reason that people do, because I know writers who obsessively read Amazon reviews or Goodread reviews, and that is just a way to slow madness to me. But it's a way, I think, of trying to feel like you're in control of the process, even though you're not. Right? It's out of your hands. It's out in the world. And so I just feel like I have to surrender that to the reader and let them have their own experience with it instead of trying to interpret it or control it for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. And probably, yeah, keeping you a little bit saner than some might be. But
well, I don't know about that, but I'm definitely not being driven crazy by reviews.
Well, Any Other Family has had some great reception so far. Thus far, I'm sure that being this out of your control, it will still feel rewarding to be out there and speaking with people about it.
Oh yeah.
Of course, it's a story, a novel about four children and three adoptive mothers and a complicated, unforgettable family. But yeah, talk a little bit about your own path to this novel, because I believe that in 2018 you unexpectedly became an adoptive mother yourself, and you talk some and have talked some about kind of the difference between closed adoptions and open adoptions. And it's kind of a very interesting time right now, given the overturning of Roe versus Wade and that whole conversation. Not that we need to get into that, but Talk about
your... but it's very relevant.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about your inspiration behind the book, and then we'll talk about this, the complicated interweaving of these narratives.
Sure. So, so back in 2018, my husband and I did not have kids, and we were old, so we kind of thought that ship had sailed. And I got a call one night from my OBGYN. It was like 9 o'clock at night. We were watching the Olympics. And I don't know about you, but like my doctors don't usually randomly call me at 9 o'clock at night. So I was a little startled. And she said, listen, I had this woman who came in for her annual exam yesterday, and it turns out she is 6 months pregnant and she wants to make a plan for adoption. Do you want a baby? And I don't know about you, but I've never gotten a call before in my life where somebody offered me another human being.
No.
It was not a call I was expecting. But, you know, my husband and I talked about it, and we met my son's birth mother and then his birth father. And we just all kind of fell in love and created this family. And yeah, so we have an open adoption, which is becoming more the norm. But I think a lot of people still have this idea of closed adoption in their head. So the difference is that we have a relationship, and my son has a relationship with his biological parents, and really his entire extended biological family, as much as we can do that. And so, you know, we know from the past that a lot of people grew up without knowing any of their history, and sometimes not even knowing they were adopted. And we know that when it's possible, and it is not always possible or healthy for everybody involved, but when it is possible and workable, it can be really beneficial to the child. So we're really passionate about that. And it's been really successful. It's been hard at times. It's going to be hard at times in the future. But one of the things that I came to with writing this book is that family is hard. You know, no matter how you forge it, family is complicated and wonderful and hard and amazing and loving. And you just have to kind of push it through. So yeah, that's kind of how I developed this interest in adoption. And my other books are also about family. Mm-hmm. So when I started to put together Any Other Family, it just seemed like the right story to tell.
Yeah. Absolutely. And in your own words, you actually said adoptive families are just like any other family. And I think, as you put it, wonderful and complicated. Yeah, let's talk about the work itself. And then you had mentioned that you're kind of working out these questions in your head. And so, of course, it can't help but bleed into the work and into these fascinating characters. And we won't do any spoilers on this show, but I thought it was interesting that the book has a diagram at the beginning, near the prologue, that just kind of maps out the relationships. And at first, it's kind of vexing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, talk a little bit about kind of how you structured this fantastically complicated and wonderful story.
Yeah, so I'll just do the elevator pitch, which is Any Other Family is the story of three sets of adoptive parents who become family when they adopt biological siblings. So each of them adopts part of this family, and they're on their first annual, maybe last annual, if you ask some of them, family vacation, and they get a call from their children's birth mother saying she's pregnant again, and she wants their help finding a family to adopt this child as well. So that's kind of the setup. And, you know, I think I always do this, and I never really, it's interesting sort of being interviewed about your work, because if you're just doing your writing, you're not necessarily thinking about why you do things. But when you get asked questions, you have to articulate it. So I think that one of the things that I've done all along is that I've taken these questions that I'm wrestling with personally, and I give them to characters to work it out, because I'm like, I don't know, you guys figure it out. and that was very much the case here, you know, kind of like, what does it mean to be a family when you're, because even if, you know, you get married, you usually have some period of courtship and you meet everybody and you meet their extended family. And this was very different. I think I talk in the book gave to one of the characters, this idea that it's like an arranged marriage, where you're just sort of like thrown into this relationship, and for better or worse, there you are. And yeah, so I was just kind of wrestling with these questions of what it takes to make a family. How do you, like, if you have no shared past, if you have no history, how do you set boundaries, and what kind of traditions do you create, and how do you honor the history and baggage and different sort of rules for living, not to mention rules for parenting, that everybody comes to the relationship with. So I was like, okay, you guys go figure this out. And I came up with these three women and four children. And two of the women are married. And I just kind of set them loose on these questions that I was wrestling with.
Yeah. I don't know why I thought while I was enjoying the book, all happy families are alike. Mm-hmm. And each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. The Leo Tolstoy quote from Anna Karenina kept popping up into my head, because of course it's complicated. Of course, as you mentioned, these boundaries and traditions and all the baggage that comes with not really being especially connected, like on a timeline, but then being thrown together is pretty fascinating stuff. So let's talk about the process. Obviously, you have some lived process, but talk a little bit about kind of, you know, as you're putting all of these pieces and characters together, are you somebody who is plotting out like with an outline of some sort before you kind of get into the work? Are you just digging in and starting to churn out pages? How do you kind of set up how do you set up the desk before you actually start getting into the flow state?
Yeah. So I am a little bit of both. I'm a little bit of a plotter and a little bit of a pantser. Over time, I have definitely learned to be more structured. It just, like I say to my writing students, you're going to outline at some point. So either you can do it beforehand, or you can do it in the middle when you have created a huge knot and you don't know what to do, or you can do it at the end when you have a big pile of chaos and have to find a story within that. And I've found that the earlier in the process you do it, the better it is. It's sort of the more time it saves you, and it helps make decisions. And this is a pretty complicated structure. The book is written in third person, but it is a very close third. So the mothers are alternating chapters, and I kind of had to keep track of who was doing what and what was happening. I mean, one of the issues, just sort of very practically as a writer, that I had to wrestle with is that just this family together in this vacation house, there's 9 people. Cool. And that's a lot of people to manage in a scene. And there's a baby, and like, you can't just always have the baby sleeping. The baby has to be awake sometimes. So it's just a lot of stage management. And so I really feel like outlines help. I have color-coded post-it notes, which are my savior. I just kind of worked it through. And then I also have, there are kind of interstitials in between sets of chapters that are from other perspectives of hopeful adoptive parents. And so I had to kind of manage where those were going to do as well. So I really feel like a little bit of planning saved me in that way. Of course, it changed as it went along. My editor was highly involved with this. This was my 2020, I wrote it in 2020 novel. So she and I were on the phone all the time because we had nothing else to do. We had nowhere else to go. So she was highly involved, and it did change a lot over time. But I think having this general idea of where I wanted each of these people to go individually, and then where I wanted the family to go overall, having an idea of that ahead of time was super helpful.
So if you could be kind of evocative about, you know, like when you are in the throes of, you know, the flow state and the kind of the, when you're hitting your stride, what do you feel like is kind of like, can you describe your best writing day, kind of how it starts and, or when it starts and kind of how you get into that flow state?
I think that it's best when I have a plan and I know what I'm doing. Those are the best days. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Are you familiar with 2K to 10K? It was a blog post and then she transformed it into an ebook. It was basically
the writing.
Yeah. So how to go from writing 2,000 words a day to 10,000 words a day. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I got to tell you, writing 10,000 words a day, I think, is a terrible idea. But the principles that she recommends are really smart. And one of them is know where you're going before you walk in. And sort of like if you have a vision of what you're doing, you know, whether it's a little movie in your head or it's a post-it note that's full of four bullet points that you want to accomplish in that day. I think that's really helpful to me, because if I just kind of start writing, I'm just going to meander around and I might stumble across some interesting things, but it's not going to be great. I also think that there's a couple of places in the work where I'm more likely to hit that flow state. I think the beginning, we're all familiar with that, where you're super excited about the project and you're getting to know everybody. You know, it's like falling in love, right? You're super excited. You want to spend all this time with people. And then you hit, for me, it's usually about the 20,000 word mark. And now it's like you're in the long-term relationship. My friend Denise calls it the farts and laundry stage. And it's like, yeah, here we are. We're in the farts and laundry stage. You know, I got to move all you people around and get you going. We're in act two of the book. And that's much harder to get into that flow state. And that is where the idea of knowing where I'm going is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And that's an ideal day to me, is where I know where I'm going. And then I sit down and I get there and maybe I have some wonderful moments of serendipity along the way. But I really can sink into it because I don't have to be sitting there worrying about what next, what next, what next. I can just kind of enjoy the process. I'm a very character-driven writer. And so I really just kind of want to hang out with these people and have a good time with them. And so whatever I can do story-wise to give myself the space to do that, that's really what gets me into that flow state. And then I can hit whatever point I was hoping to hit, or maybe not. And then for a good day for me, that's about 2,500 words. But A, I'm a very fast writer. I'm a slow thinker, but a fast writer. And B, having that plan really helps. And then I can walk away and think about where I want to go with these people the next day.
I've heard some writers explain it kind of like as a grief of a grieving period. Do you feel when you finish a novel, do you feel that kind of like,
oh, hell no,
a little bit of grief? you're just like, I got it done. I'm getting it off my desk.
Oh my God. I'm like, I wish all these people would just die in a fire. I'm so tired of hanging out with them. Like, I always hit a point where I'm like, can't you people solve your own problems? Do I have to do everything for you? I'm like, oh, I do have to do everything for you. Right, right. I created you. You're imaginary. I have to do everything for you. No, I am. When I'm done, I am ready to move on. And, you know, I know there are writers who reread their own work. I am not one of those people. I'm going to have to sit down and kind of flip through the book to find something to read at some appearances I'm going to make. And I'm just like dreading that, because first of all, you can't help but look at it, especially, I mean, I finished it over a year ago. And so there's that perspective you have now, right? Where you're like, oh, I wish I'd done that. And, oh, I would have made this sentence different or had this person do something different. So there's that. But then there's also, it's like, I'm kind of like, I'm working on other stuff and my head is in a different place. And I don't want to go back and fight the battle that I've already fought.
Interesting. Well, it has had some fantastic blurbs. Of course, your peer, Christina Baker Klein, called the book funny, wise, heartbreaking, and heart-mending. Any Other Family explores what it means to be a family in all its messy complication. Of course, I thought Kirkus Reviews had something nice to say about it. They called it a prismatic story of family, adoption, and how the people we choose to keep close shape who we are. And that it is. And congrats on the work. It's got to feel good to be getting out there, mixing it up with the people, even though we do expect you to be back in that cubicle alone.
I think I know, and I think it's especially good like after we've all been so isolated for so long. It's really nice. I did a bookseller event earlier this year and in person with a couple of other writers, and it was a really nice feeling. So there is that ebb and flow to publishing, which is nice, right? I talked about those two different jobs, writer and author, but there is that part of the author job that I do really enjoy, and it's so interesting to me. I talk to a lot of book clubs. You know, they invite me to Zoom in or Skype in or whatever. Mm. And it's always so interesting to me talking to them and hearing their ideas and their stories. And so that really kind of energizes me to go forward on the next work. Not every author likes it, and that's totally fine. We're all different. But yeah, it does feel really good to put it out in the world and be like, hey, I made this thing. I hope it gives you something to think about and talk about.
Amazing. Well, of course, I will link to your home base there, eleanor-brown.com, and the book. Any other places you connect with listeners and or readers out there?
Not anymore. I actually left social media a few years ago because it was just another way to drive myself bananas and to not write. I know there are some writers who really enjoy that connection, but for me, it just felt like a constant source of stress. And it was a way to make myself feel productive without ever getting words on the page.
Yeah.
So I left social media. I think I'm going to reactivate my Facebook page, to announce the book there. But no, come check out my website. I do have a mailing list. I don't think there's a link to sign up there right now. Maybe I'll do that after you and I are done talking.
Reactivate but, I mean, all the things.
it's a good sort of writerly lesson. You know, I think there was a time, like when my first book came out, they were like, you have to be blogging and you have to be on social media.
Right.
You have to do this. And this time I was like, you know what? I really don't want to go back to social media. Like, I think it's broken. I think it's contributing to a lot of problems in society. And I don't know that it sells books. And they were like, okay. So, I mean, that's kind of like a gift that I'm going to give to some writers out there, is like, if you love it and it really lights you up and you can still get words on the page, then you go forth, my friend, and tweet and TikTok your little heart out. But if you don't, it's not going to make or break your career as a writer.
Yeah, true enough. Well, I got a fun one for you before we wrap up with your advice to fellow scribes. Oh, I did want to ask. I just had read that you had done some workshops with Lighthouse Writers Workshops in Colorado, which I'm very familiar with because I lived in Denver for nearly two decades. But are you still doing stuff with them? Or
I have not been recently. I worked for, they have a wonderful program there called the Book Project, which is like an MFA without the MFA, and people can participate remotely. And so I highly recommend that to everybody. So I did that for a few years. I was a mentor for that.
Cool.
And then I needed a break for a while, but I am still very much involved in that community. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. And I've taught there. I've taught at The Loft in Minneapolis, which is fantastic. Grub Street in Boston. There's so many great places to find a community of writers and develop your craft.
100%. All right. Here's a fun one for you. If you could have dinner with any author from any era to your favorite restaurant in the world, who would you take? Where would you take them?
I would take Maeve Binchy because it is one of the great sadnesses of my life that I did not get to meet her before she passed away. And we actually sent her a number of desperate blurb requests for the Weird Sisters, but I think she was quite infirm at that point and probably not blurbing a whole lot. But anyway, she is just like, her reading her books to me is just like sitting down with an old friend and hearing a bunch of gossip about people you used to go to school with. And I imagine that a meal with her would be really similar. Plus the Irish accent would be great. Where would we go? I gotta tell you, I'm not much of a foodie. I don't know. We would probably go someplace boring like Panera because they let you stay at Panera a really long time.
Okay, that's a new one.
Nobody's kicking you out.
Maeve Binchy at Panera.
Yeah.
I like it. And you sleep in a sandwich and a big salad.
Exactly, exactly. And you're good to go.
Okay. And bottomless coffee.
Right, exactly. Exactly. What more could you want, really? Yeah. And they have free Wi-Fi, so it's a great place to write. I highly recommend.
Oh, okay. A little writing workshop with Maeve at Panera. Love it. Okay. Yeah, so you know, we really do appreciate your time, your wisdom. I could probably pick your brain all day, but if you could just leave us with your advice to fellow scribes on just how to persevere through good times or bad.
I think I'll go back to what I say at the beginning, which is that you have to do it because you love it, right? You know, publication and authoring is this totally separate world from writing. And I think that I thought for a long time that once I got an agent, once I got a publisher, all my problems would be over. But no, it's just a set of new problems and pains in the butt that you have to deal with. So, you know, you got to do it because you love it. And the advice I always give to my students is regularity over length. So I would rather have you write for 5 minutes every day than write for 5 hours once a month. And then the last thing that I'll say is something Pat Conroy once said to my husband when we met him at a book signing. Pat Conroy said, call yourself a writer because no one else will.
Hmm. I like that. Call yourself a writer because no one else will. I think those are very, very wise words to wrap up on. Thank you so much. Best of luck with the upcoming promotion and tour of your latest. Congrats on the work. And we hope you come back and wrap with us in the future.
I will. Thank you so much, Kelton.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm. And scene. We got it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I love talking to you. It's just like listening to you. It's so cool.
Oh, thank you. I love that Pat Conroy quote.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. That's so
he was so lovely. Like he dropped so many wonderful knowledge bombs.